Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recording.
This is Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
It's a good time, you know what I mean?
Never say never, but never.
On Sports Radio 960 AM, WSBT.
Boy, that escalated quickly.
In a highly competitive environment with lots of excellent choices available to us, Marcus won the job.
With Sean Stiles.
Notre Dame is the national champion.
The big thing is that we're all moving on.
This standard will be unwavering, and this is the standard that will drive this football program to its 12th national championship.
Grab that net and catch that beautiful butterfly, pal.
He's running down the middle by the 50. He's at the 30. He's bare-chested and banging his chest. They're chasing him. They're not going to get him.
And now your host, Sean Stiles.
Happy, happy Tuesday to you. Cruising on into a brand new day. Notre Dame officially, of course, got its new head coach yesterday. And now we know exactly what Marcus Freeman's first schedule is going to look like as well. We've got that released today. Plenty of Notre Dame talk coming up for you over the next couple of hours on Budweiser's weekday sports beat. And then also at 7:30 over on 96.1 The Ton, 96.1 FM, Darren Pritchett's going to have the call of Mishawaka versus Mishawaka Marion boys basketball. So a lot of stuff going on tonight. So here's what the schedule looks like. We've known for a while Notre Dame is going to open up at Ohio State September 3rd. So, great coincidence, I guess, with Marcus Freeman becoming Notre Dame's head coach, as he will be coaching his second game of his career as a head coach against his alma mater, Ohio State, September 3rd. And it will be a true road game for the Irish for the third time in the last 4 years to open up a season. Also, the seventh all-time meeting between Notre Dame and Ohio State. It'll be the first trip to Columbus since 1995 for Notre Dame, with Freeman squaring off against his alma mater. So then after that, home opener September 10th, against Marshall. It'll be the first meeting between Notre Dame and the Thundering Herd. September 17th, the next week, Notre Dame will host Cal. First meeting between those two since 1967. So Notre Dame will have three Pac-12 teams on the schedule next season. September 24th at North Carolina. It'll be the third straight year that Notre Dame and the Tar Heels square off on the football field. And then a bye the following week. So four games to start the season and then a bye week, and then they will come back October 8th against BYU in Las Vegas. Shamrock Series game at Allegiant Stadium. That'll be fun for all the degenerates. First ever game for Notre Dame in the state of Nevada, that will be. October 15th, Stanford comes to Notre Dame. This will be the year that Stanford comes in October. October 22nd, UNLV, first ever meeting between those two teams. October 29th, Syracuse, of course, part of the ACC arrangement. November 5th, they will host the Clemson Tigers early November for the second time in the last 3 years. And the most noteworthy news to come out of Clemson, was it yesterday or the day before? Again, everything, every day just blurs together at this point. Longtime defensive coordinator Brent Venables going back to Oklahoma to become head coach. So, Dabo Sweeney will be replacing his most notable sign stealer from the sideline, Brent Venables, the defensive coordinator. He won't be there next year. What will that defense look like? Well, it'll look a little bit different anyway. November 12th, Notre Dame will play Navy. That'll be at Baltimore's M&T Bank Stadium, home of the Baltimore Ravens. November 19th, Boston College. Noteworthy there, Phil Jurkovec just announced that he's going to be staying at Boston College for another year, the former Notre Dame quarterback who transferred to BC last year. So as long as Phil Jurkovec is healthy, and he did have some health issues this year, he will get to come back to Notre Dame Stadium to play his former team. That, of course, will be a senior day game. And then November 26th at USC, the final of the three Pac-12 teams, and it'll be a pair of teams, end of the season. Marcus Freeman, Lincoln Riley, both of them introduced as head coach here in recent days. And Freeman named the 30th head coach in Notre Dame history yesterday. He had quite a day, both before and after his big press conference. By the way, speaking of Lincoln Riley, have you seen Lincoln Riley's introductory press conference at USC? Big difference in the production value between Freeman's press conference at Notre Dame and Riley's at Southern Cal. They had this stage set up, and there are these like three podiums, and it looked like someone was doing a spoof of a 1970s game show, basically. Like, hey, it's time to play the Joker's Wild or whatever. And I just actually saw on Twitter someone did the What's Up With That. If you've ever watched, if you watched Saturday Night Live in recent years, the What's Up With That song, it was hilarious. But you have to see it. It's floating around on Twitter right now. But anyway, before the press conference, Freeman goes on the Dan Patrick Show. After the press conference, he goes on Colin Cowherd, The Herd with Colin Cowherd. Both of those shows, of course, heard daily right here on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. Then after his Cowherd appearance, he goes to the airport, jumps on a plane, goes out recruiting with Tommy Reese. So it never ends. By the way, on The Herd yesterday, Colin Cowherd asks Marcus Freeman if he was shocked when he found out Brian Kelly was going to Notre Dame. And here is Marcus Freeman's response.
Yeah, when he called me and told me, hey, I'm going to take the job as a head coach at LSU, I was in complete shock. I did not see this coming at all. And my mind started racing, and he said, hey, I want you to be my defensive coordinator. And I said, okay. I said, but I need to ask my wife. And so from that point, that drive from where I was at recruiting to home, and it all became crazy. But to say I'm not surprised he decided to go to LSU, that would be a lie.
Yeah, so surprised. He was shocked, needed to talk to his wife. Apparently no fairy godmothers floating around, you know, like, well, maybe there was, considering where Marcus Freeman ended up and where Brian Kelly ended up. But he was everywhere. And, I mean, he has nailed every talking point, every metric he could win so far. And then today, Freeman wrote a letter in the Players' Tribune. It's pretty good stuff, so I'll read some of it with some of his comments from his press conference yesterday kind of mixed in. Again, this is the letter Marcus Freeman wrote in the Players' Tribune. Dear Notre Dame, it's funny how life works out. I visited this university for the first time when I was about 16 or 17 years old and was recruited to play here. I had a choice to make, and in the end, what it came down to was Ohio State or Notre Dame. I chose Ohio State. I loved Tyrone Willingham. I thought he was a great coach, and to be honest, he reminded me a bit of my father. Fast forward to last year, and you might have heard that I was being considered for a couple coaching jobs. During that time, me and my wife, Joanna, took a trip down to Louisiana and then up here to South Bend. And when we got back home, it was another tough decision. I can't tell you exactly what it was that told us to come to Notre Dame, but there was something. We all know there's something different about Notre Dame. We all know it's something special, and I just thank God that I didn't make the wrong decision twice.
Wow. I mean, I wish I could point out every moment that led to this point, but you just look and you think about, I told the defensive unit in a meeting towards the end of the year, the ability to love a group of guys in 11 months, like that's to me what shows you the power of Notre Dame. The minute to be around, the ability to be around a group of guys and to fall in love and trust me. And that's what, I want to make sure everybody understands, like I've been asked this question a couple of times, being a player, your players are really happy, they were excited. That doesn't mean that it's all warm and fuzzy. They understand the expectation. They understand to achieve anything, it's going to be really hard, and they're going to be pushed, and they're going to be pushed really hard. But they got a leader, and they have leaders around them that care about them, that have their best interest at heart. And that's how we're going to create success here, is that we're going to push each other, but they know their leaders trust them. They know their leaders love them. But that, to me, is like what has gotten us to this point is, over 11 months, you've gotten to a point where you feel that way about a group of guys, and I hope it's the feeling's mutual most of the time. And so the other part of that question, do I ever think I'd be the head coach at Notre Dame in 11 months? No. I mean, that's not realistic. Well, I guess it is now, you know. I guess now it is, but it is. It is a dream come true. It is. And every once in a while, I sit back and I say, whoa. You are the head coach of University of Notre Dame. But a minute that once that second goes up, it's about get back to work.
And now I'll continue with some of the letter that Marcus Freeman had in the Players' Tribune. I know our community and our fans didn't expect to get their head coach changed in week 13 of the season, but that's our reality. And I couldn't be more grateful to Jack Swarbrick and Father Jenkins for their faith in me to step into this role. I could tell you 100 ways that I understand how special this place is, that I understand this football team, that I know what it takes to win a national championship, but I've learned something valuable in my career as a coach. It isn't always about what you say. At the end of the day, it's about the impact of what you do and how you make people feel. I'm going to care about these young men and what we're building together here with all I've got.
Well, I think coming in from being an outsider coming in, there's times you think you can come to Notre Dame and say, I'm going to change who can come in here. I'm going to change who can have success here. You won't. You have to embrace this place. You have to embrace the things that make us different. You have to embrace the people here that are different. You have to embrace the competitive thinkers, the individuals that are on this football team. If you embrace everything that comes with the University of Notre Dame, you're going to be better because of it. And it's better, you can put a line there, better person, better football player, better student, better mother, father. But if you embrace this place, you're going to be better because of it.
Continuing with some more from Marcus Freeman in his letter in the Players' Tribune. There was about a day and a half there when I knew this was going to be a reality, but I wasn't allowed to talk to my team. And I'll be honest with you, that was a stressful day and a half. Once everything was announced, though, and I finally could talk to them, it was a great release. I wouldn't say it was a pep talk that I gave as much as a statement of purpose, a statement of gratitude. It was me letting them know how much I appreciate them, how much I love them, because Notre Dame football, it's about them. It will always be about them. That's one thing I know for sure. Another thing I know about these players, they're smart, they're independent. That's the deal when you're a student and a player at a prestigious school like this. From the minute you wake up at 6 a.m. to the minute you go to sleep, you don't have a choice to turn it off, to relax. If you don't compete and you're not a tough-minded individual from the minute you get to class, then you're not going to have success here. That's just a fact. And when you get up every day with that mentality, eventually it becomes who you are. That's why you're seeing us out there playing our best at the end of the season, because this is what our guys know how to do. It's not a grind. It's not a drag. It's what we do. And that's what makes the Notre Dame football player different. Listen, I know I've been labeled as a player's coach, and I'm proud to wear that badge, but I'll be honest, I think there's a misconception about a player's coach that, oh, the players like him, he's their buddy. And my players know this, just because I don't walk around like I have to put fear in their hearts, that doesn't mean the demands aren't going to be extremely high. I've always been a believer that being a coach doesn't mean there has to be some constant level of discomfort for kids to reach their goals. You can be very demanding and still make people feel good and still make people feel important as long as they believe you have their best interest at heart.
I plan on leading this team with an unwavering standard. We will call it the golden standard. So what is the golden standard? Number one is challenge everything. This is why I'm here. Our leaders challenge normalcy. Our athletic director, our president, challenge normalcy. Challenge everything is a mentality to find a better way. Number two is unit strength. Unit strength means love. It's making a choice to love your teammates. It's what turns players into a team. And number three is the competitive spirit. It's creating a winner's mindset. I believe that leaders are born, but winners are created. And you're created through intentional actions. And as I previously stated, this standard will be unwavering. And this is the standard that will drive this football program to its 12th national championship.
That's the coach I've always been, and I'm going to stay true to that. These kids today are so smart, they're so intelligent, and they know what's real and what's phony. If you're not authentic, they'll see right through you. One of the best pieces of advice I've gotten is that you have to be yourself. I've gotten that same advice over and over from some of the best leaders I've ever talked to. Guys like Jim Tressel, Luke Fickell, heck, Ryan Day said this 2 days ago. You have to be yourself. That's 100% true. If I tried to be Brian Kelly as a head coach, that wouldn't make sense. Same thing if I tried to be Luke Fickell or Jim Tressel or anybody else I've coached with. If we're going to have success here at Notre Dame during my tenure, it's going to have to be me. But it's also a part of learning and growing that you always take a little bit here, a little bit there from everyone you encounter in the makeup of who you are. And I'll be the first to admit that all those guys are a piece of the way I lead. They've all shaped me. I would say that my leadership style really comes down to two main ideas. First, being disciplined, have a routine, doing the things that it takes to have success, working tirelessly. My dad was a little bit older, and he was retired by the time I was born. And so he raised me with the structure that being in the Air Force 26 years will teach you. He taught my older brother and I that only work ethic and motivation will get you where you want to go. And second, being selfless, having the ability and the character to serve others. I think I got that from my mother. She's a Korean woman who fell in love with this American guy that was stationed over in Korea, and she left all of her comfort back home in order to start a family with my dad in the United States. She's taught me so much about sacrifice, how it can be its own reward. This team is in a really good position now. We're 11-1, and through that brief window of chaos we experienced last week, I said to our leadership, look, we need to enhance, but we don't need to change. There are key parts of this coaching staff that have gotten us to this point. I think we have the best coaching staff in America. And to the bring in your own guys crowd, I'll just say these coaches we have here are my guys. So that was my MO, and this was all coming together. I was hoping to keep as much consistency for this group as possible because we're right there, man. We're ready. We're extremely close to being in a position to win a national championship. The longer I'm in this profession, the more it's become really obvious what it means for a man that looks like me to be elevated in this industry. I'm a part of the National Coalition of Minority Football Coaches, started by Coach Loxley. He's doing an unbelievable job of trying to open doors for minority coaches, and being a part of this coalition has been an important reminder that, hey, you are a representation of a lot of people. That's what I want to be. I want to be a representation, but also more than that, I want to be a demonstration. I want to be a demonstration of what someone can do and the level they can do it at. If they are given the opportunity, because that's what is needed, opportunity. We need more minorities to get the opportunity to interview, and we need more minorities to get the opportunity to do a job that they can have success in. Actually, let me end on a quick story. There's something I say to our players before we go out there every game. One play, one life. Focus on the one play. Focus on the moment.
Well, I think it starts with we're going to recruit at the highest level. And we're going to recruit the best football players in the country that fit Notre Dame. And you're not going to change the standards at Notre Dame. But there are certain players out there that fit Notre Dame that they might not know. And so our job as a coaching staff is to be able to communicate with these young people what Notre Dame can do for your life. And that's what I plan on doing.
At the end of the day, man, that's why I do this. We have a lot that we want to accomplish here without a doubt. Trust me, this is Notre Dame. We have big goals, but it's the process it takes to get to those goals that's going to set us apart. It's the way we're going to do it. That's going to see these young men, that's going to set up these young men to achieve what it is they ultimately want out of this game, and I couldn't be more grateful for the opportunity to lead them. Signed, Marcus Freeman, and again, that is from the Players Tribune today. And, of course, the sound from Mr. Freeman from yesterday's press conference at his introductory press conference at Notre Dame. We're going to talk more Marcus Freeman coming up here in just a moment. First, we'll remind you that Budweiser's weekday sports beat, of course, is brought to you by Budweiser, the king of beers, locally distributed by United Beverage Company of South Bend. Football fans, this bud's for you. The Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger's a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. Tim Grouse, State Farm Insurance. You need life insurance today. Tomorrow will be too late. Protect your family by calling Tim at 232-9981. Midland Engineering Company completing their first century of quality roofing experience. The Mishawaka Education Foundation, granting a better future. Barnaby's of Mishawaka and Granger, serving Michiana's most favorite pizza for both dine-in and carry-out. Fisher's Barbecue and Catering, open Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday at noon, Saturday from 11 a.m. until sold out. South Bend Orthopedics, team physicians for the University of Notre Dame since 1949. Wings at Center, Grill and Pub, with 14 Michiana area locations. Stop in today or order online at togo.wingsetc.com. Four Winds Casino, your entertainment escape. Legacy Heating and Air, your heating and clean air specialist. Visit them online at legacyheatingandairinc.com. And Mimo's Pizza on Edison in Mishawaka. More Notre Dame football talk coming up next on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, Sports Radio 960 WSBT. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat continues on Sports Radio 960 AM WSBT. Well, Jesse making his second straight appearance in the 5 o'clock hour at 5:30 because I'll be on the road again tomorrow. He typically does rapid fire with me on Wednesdays, but I'll be traveling over to Valparaiso, and we've got a Notre Dame women's game at Valpo tomorrow night. So just said, hey, I'll jump on at 5:30 again. How you doing today?
Oh, doing pretty good. The work day is officially over now that I'm here with you, and it's a nice way to transition into the rest of my evening. We have some nice things that we're getting ready to talk about, and of course, the Marcus Freeman era has officially started, so yeah. I think it's exciting times to be a Notre Dame fan.
Let's just go ahead and start with that. Marcus Freeman is officially the new coach, so what do you think? You know, like, let me back up. Let's actually just start with this, because this is kind of a little mini version of rapid fire. So fill in the blank. The last week has been blank.
The last week has been hectic, but Notre Dame football is now in better hands. I know Marcus Freeman has never coached a game as a head coach and may only be 35 years old, but those things don't matter to me. What matters to me is listening to what he has to offer in his interviews, more importantly, his induction ceremony yesterday, and of course, the actions
ceremony
that come. Yeah, I guess I just kind of went through that in my head myself, and I was like, is it really? He's just like introduction.
Probably
to being
an
the head
introduction.
Coach.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. So
that's okay.
Missed a couple letters in there. Introduction ceremony yesterday. And of course, the actions that are going to come from those words. You know, it's one thing to say these things in his interviews and the press conference yesterday, but there's, you know, you have to back those things up with your words. Marcus Freeman can and will be more of a player's coach than I think Brian Kelly ever was. One of the knocks on Brian Kelly from past players, and I think some, maybe even current players who maybe never even said anything, is, you know, Brian Kelly is not the most personable guy. Sometimes he can come off as a hothead, and you can use other words in there. And this isn't something, or to me, this is something that goes beyond the X's and O's. There's something to be said about a coach that you know will always have your back and mentor you in your greatest times of struggle beyond football. It is great that we get to see him immediately in action, him as in Marcus Freeman, as Notre Dame plays Oklahoma State in a highly anticipated Fiesta Bowl. This is the type of stage that Brian Kelly struggled in during his time at Notre Dame. In my opinion, he can never really win the big one, whether it was national championship games, playoff games, or New Year's Six Bowls. And I have no doubt that Marcus Freeman is, you know, this is obviously biased, but I believe that Marcus Freeman's going to lead Notre Dame to their first New Year's Six Bowl win since the 1993 Cotton Bowl win over Texas A&M, stamping the start of his legacy at Notre Dame.
Yeah, go back a little bit because, you know, you touched on player coach, and obviously you played in college, so what is player coach? What exactly does that mean to you?
To me, a player's coach is honestly a guy that's not only your coach, but could be looked as your best friend. You see it a lot right now with Matt Corral and Lane Kiffin down at Old Miss. You got, you know, those guys, Matt Corral has come out and said that Lane Kiffin is literally one of his best friends. And that's the type of relationship that you want from your head coach. It's a player's coach is a guy that you know you can trust no matter what. You know, these things go beyond just football. And Freeman alluded that to yesterday in his press conference when he said, there's always going to be an end of a football career, no matter if it's one season in the NFL, four seasons in the college level,
right?
You know, no seasons in the college level, 10 years in the NFL level, there's always an end to football. So a player's coach is a guy who prepares you not only for when football ends, but when life starts after football.
Yeah, that's, you know, and as Marcus Freeman said, it's not just that they're going to be buddy-buddy, but he's still going to push these guys as well. And I think that that is such a big part of it, you know. He's found ways to connect and communicate differently with each guy. And as you said, you know, I think that when you talk about Brian Kelly, there's obviously a lot of football acumen there, but I think that one of the knocks against him was he was too hands off, and like he's talked about those relationships and stuff like that in public. But like when you hear players, I just don't know. I can't speak, you know, specifically to that, but you hear a lot of players say that it was a lot more hands off than that. So, I mean, you've kind of already hit what you think about Marcus Freeman. I think, you know, the curious thing about, not curious, but this is a high-profile position, arguably the most high-profile position in the country, and one that can pull you in a lot of different directions. And he is young, but he has obviously impressed a lot of people in his youth, you know, is part of, I think, the appeal as well, because he is able to connect so well, you know, with so many different kinds of people. You played in college. You had a veteran head coach who retired after your freshman year, and then you had, you know, same deal, basically, a defensive coordinator who was promoted to his first head coaching position. So is there anything maybe that you observed there about, you know, kind of how they went about things?
Yeah, I think the thing that I most, the most immediate change that I noticed was an abrupt change in culture. Our new head coach wanted to establish a new culture and identity that fit the goals that he was trying to achieve. And it's not necessarily a knock against, you know, what our prior coach did or what prior coaches have done, in this case, Brian Kelly. But it's just about establishing a new culture that this coach wants to identify by and how he wants his team to play. For us, we wanted to create a new swagger for how we went about our business and the hard work that was needed to achieve our goals, our personal goals, our team goals, you know, our game-to-game goals, or our game-to-game goals and our season goals. But the framework always stayed the same, you know. And that's the thing that I think gets kind of lost, is the framework always stays the same. When you go coach to coach, like, you have basically the same practice schedule, the same workout routine, the same film routine, the same off-season routine. But what you start to see are those finer details, and the, I guess, the attention to detail to these finer details. And I think a lot of these things can be paralleled to the three-part golden standard that Marcus Freeman outlined yesterday in his press conference, which was, one, challenge everything, a mentality to always find a better way, unit strength, what turns players into a team or working together as a team, and then third, the competitive spirit, creating a winner's mindset. You know, these are the things that as a player, they get you fired up the most. A coach that with an obvious plan in place to elevate his players and program to new heights. And it makes you want to buy in yourself. It almost feels refreshing when you get a new coach like this, because it's, you want to prove yourself and commit yourself in new ways that you hadn't before.
Yeah, and I think that that's the biggest thing, you know, that we've kind of talked about here the last couple of days, is this isn't the, you, with the youth and inexperience and all that stuff. One, he's at least been there for a season, and so he already has a great connection, not just with the players, but, you know, with people in general at Notre Dame. But now you're just getting kind of and the program is in great shape. It is in much better shape right now, 12 years after Brian Kelly was hired, than when he was hired. But there is another level to go to, and now you have a new perspective, I guess, that can help get you there, you know, because if there was the knock on Brian Kelly, the goal at Notre Dame, because they're not in a conference, is to win national championships. And he said that plenty of times himself, but it's been 33 years now since they've won a national championship. So, you know, now there's a chance for, you know, some new eyes and a fresh perspective to come in and potentially get them to that next step. So let me ask you this, Jess. What do you think Brian Kelly's legacy is from his time at Notre Dame?
I think Brian Kelly's legacy from his time at Notre Dame will be appreciated and not forgotten, or I guess shouldn't be forgotten. You know, I don't think that there should be any slander on Brian Kelly's name. And I think that, most importantly, people should appreciate what Brian Kelly was able to do after Tyrone Willingham and Charlie Weiss' 10 years at Notre Dame. You know, Notre Dame struggled there. They, you know, Charlie Weiss, yeah, had a couple good years, but you could argue that was, you know, rollover from Tyrone Willingham's recruits and stuff like that. He had a great NFL mind, but couldn't really get players, I think, to reach new levels. I think his scheme was nice in that kind of sense. But during his tenure, Brian Kelly won an impressive 113 games. He received Coach of the Year honors in 2012 and 2018. He had 10-plus win seasons in 7 of the seasons he coached at Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Kelly reached the national championship, the playoffs twice, and the New Year's Six Bowls twice. He had 45 players drafted during his time at Notre Dame. But I think the thing that lingers the most for me, and it's kind of the recurring theme, is what was Brian Kelly's biggest win during his time at Notre Dame? Kelly, to me, seemed to be the guy who could win all the games he was supposed to, but never won the games where he necessarily wasn't the favorite. But which leads me to believe that Brian Kelly was the common denominator in this equation. It left a bad taste in my mouth. I said this last week when he said that he simply maxed out his ceiling at Notre Dame, and that's why he couldn't win a national championship. He maxed out his potential with the type of players that he was recruiting. And to me, that's quite frankly a bunch of BS. It is your job to have your team ready and come up with ways to win these big games where you're not necessarily the favorite. You know, and the question I just posed, in all honesty, what is Brian Kelly's biggest win at Notre Dame? Maybe one of those wins over Oklahoma?
That's, yeah, I think 2012 Oklahoma is probably it. You know, they go on the road and beat another top 10 team. That's got to be it. You know, otherwise, I mean, you know, he did beat USC early on, and, you know, and maybe that's not, you know, in terms of, you know, quote unquote big games, but he also beat Michigan, you know. So whether or not they, you know, how high they were ranked and those kind of things, but he beat their rivals more consistently than those predecessors did. I definitely think the win over Oklahoma is probably it. Now, that's been a while. That doesn't do you any good when you're in the college football playoff, you know. I'm trying to that's probably it, though, the win over Oklahoma in 2012.
Yeah, so that just goes back to my point of regular season wins like that don't do anything for a program. You know, as a program to take the next step, you got to win the playoff games. You got to win the national championship against Alabama. You have to win, you know, even if you're not making those type of games, at least win the New Year's Six Bowl games. And he was 0-5, let's see here, I think 5 in those type of games. And like I said, to me, that falls on the shoulders of Brian Kelly, because yes, you can get to that point, but once you get to that point and you have a month to prepare, everything goes out the window. You have to do everything in your power to come up with new ways, new schemes, new ways to go about getting your team to win those games. And Brian Kelly didn't do that. And it's okay that he won the 113 games, and he was 43-8 in the last 3 seasons against Power 5 teams. And, you know, all these things, they're great. But in the end, at Notre Dame, it comes down to that last game of the season, the most important game of the season, whether you win those games or not.
No, I mean, that's true. You know, I think he definitely left the program better than he found it, which I think I heard him say in one of his interviews this week. You know, he built stability in the program, developed players, won the games he was supposed to win. You know, and I know that there are a lot of people who don't want to hear, well, it's hard to win at Notre Dame. It is. It's hard to win anywhere in college football. I mean, I just was talking to a Stanford guy a couple of weeks ago, and we heard a lot of the same things out there. And I mean, You know, that was a program that floundered for a long time. Jim Harbaugh built it up. David Shaw took the baton, kept it going for a while. Now they've found it hard to kind of keep that going past that. You know, whether or not maybe David Shaw has reached his expiration date, I don't know. But there's consistency and success that Brian Kelly built here at Notre Dame that I think, as you referenced, you've got to go back to Lou Holtz to find that kind of consistency. But the lack of big game wins, that's fair. But the other part of that also is the way he left. Unfortunately, right now, I think that the way he left casts a huge shadow over all the good things that he did. When you pack up and you talk about team all the time and team goals, and we're going to do this together and traits and, you know, traits over talent and all this different stuff. When you talk about all that stuff and then you leave your team 1 week from when you're still in contention to be in a college football playoff and you pack up, you leave your team, and you not only leave your team, but you surprised and as Marcus Freeman even said, shocked your coaches who are on your staff as well. I mean, look at when Cincinnati came to Notre Dame Stadium and all those fans in red who came to Notre Dame Stadium a couple of months ago to watch that game. And, of course, you know, Brian Kelly came from Cincinnati. That's why that series got scheduled to begin with. But every time they had a chance, they were booing Brian Kelly. They put him up on the board, and, you know, they were mentioning, you know, him as the, you know, passing Newt Rockne and the program's all-time winningest coach and all that kind of stuff. They booed him every chance they got, and that's a 12-year-old itch that they were waiting to scratch because, of, you know, he left Cincinnati in a similar fashion. And for all the good things that he did at Cincinnati, and really Luke Fickell, you know, since Brian Kelly, Luke Fickell has got that program back to, you know, where Brian Kelly had it before he left. So for all the good things Brian Kelly did there, all the people remember still is the way he left. And I think that's going to hang over him for a long time, the way he left Notre Dame. For all the good things that he did, I think that there's going to be a big shadow over that for a long time. I think that's going to be his immediate legacy. It's going to take a while, I think, for that to wear off.
Yeah, it's funny you mention that because my girlfriend is actually a University of Cincinnati graduate. And right. Brian Kelly not only never coached there while she was there, she's never been a big football fan while she was there, but all of a sudden, all she likes to do is talk about how much of a piece of crap Brian Kelly was for leaving 12 years ago when she had no concept of what football was or what Cincinnati right. was. And it's actually even more funny because, you know, we were on vacation earlier this year down in Mexico, and we actually met an older gentleman whose son played for the University of Cincinnati, and Brian Kelly recruited his son to play for the University of Cincinnati, and he still badmouthed Brian Kelly to this day, saying how much of a non-character man he was and how spineless he was. So to your point, I think this is going to haunt Brian Kelly for a while, and I think it's going to leave a bad taste in a lot of Notre Dame fans' mouth for a while, along with those Cincinnati fans. You know, I saw the stat. Brian Kelly's the only coach over the last, you know, however many times that this has happened over the last 20 or 30 years, Brian Kelly's the only guy to do it, and he's done it twice now.
Yeah.
So it's just not really a good look. I think that he could have went about things better, but time will tell, and things have happened, and Notre Dame had a better coach fall into their lap, and I'm confident enough to say that.
Real quick, okay, you live in Cleveland. You just mentioned the Cincinnati connection. And I heard somebody say that Cincinnati is gonna, you know, is Ohio's team right now, especially, you know, with the Buckeyes out of the college football playoff. Have you seen any bandwagoners pop up there in Cleveland, any Cincinnati bandwagoners, you know, since they made it into the playoff?
Now, to your point, I have a decent amount of friends that are unfortunately Ohio State fans. And they have now adopted Cincinnati to be their team and the team of Ohio all of a sudden. And they want them to beat Bama and prove it to everyone. But it's funny you asked this specific question because this past weekend we were watching the conference championship games at the bar with a couple of our friends. And one of our friends was suddenly a Cincinnati fan.
Ah!
Not once had I heard him be a supporter of Cincinnati. And quite honestly, I'm pretty sure he was an Ohio State fan. He's a Dayton graduate as well, but grew up in Cincinnati. So I guess that was his pass. But yeah, that I didn't know. He even had like a Cincinnati polo on, and I was like, where did this even come from? Who are you? Like, you're now a Cincinnati. He's like cheering into the game against Houston and like getting all upset and worried. It's like, dude, you can't just jump to a team because it's convenient and they're now in contention to make the playoffs for the first time ever.
There you go. Maybe they'll stick around a while, like Luke Fickell. You know, maybe they'll stay on that. Who knows? All right, that's going to do it for today. Jess, good stuff as always. I will talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Yep, absolutely. Jess Stiers, and we'll take a timeout. Bobby Hensley's going to join me in the 6 o'clock hour tonight. We've got more Marcus Freeman and Notre Dame football talk still to come. If we have a chance, we'll hear a comment or two from Marcus Freeman before the top of the hour as well. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
You're listening to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat with Sean Stiers on Sports Radio 960 AM WSBT.
Well, it's the second hour. There's always like, flies in the ointment.
Let's take a minute for Sean. How's Sean doing?
He's doing okay.
Yeah. That's good. I'm glad you're doing all right.
Stuff happens, right?
Yeah.
He's Bobby Hensley. Got his Miami Dolphins hat on tonight. You're proud of those Dolphins, aren't you?
I mean, they were going to go for the first draft pick. Now they decided to win the Super Bowl. So
yeah, I know.
There's no in-between with us.
What the heck?
Yeah.
Might as well. Everyone's talking great things about Tua now.
They aren't watching those games. The eyeball test isn't great. He's accurate, but he can't throw the ball downfield at all.
I love how everyone's just jumped on the Patriots bandwagon here.
The people that jumped off of it 6 months ago are heavy back on it.
I mean,
you
knew that Bill Belichick wasn't going to have two back-to-back horrible seasons. And there was a reason everyone was comparing Mac Jones to Tom Brady, right?
Yeah, it's interesting because like a lot of people, if you look at statistics and fantasy stuff, Jones isn't the best quarterback.
No.
But
well, I mean, he completed how many passes last night?
Yeah, well, I think last night's an anomaly. Like, it was so windy and all, but
right,
you
but
can't,
still.
You can't deny that he's a good quarterback for that system, and he's starting out maybe even just as good as Brady did back then. I mean, look at the early Brady stuff. His stats weren't jumping off the paper. He was just winning games.
I mean,
he wasn't even the starter the first year they won the Super Bowl. He had to come in out of relief for Bledsoe.
There's no doubt. They're on a roll. Okay, they beat Buffalo. They beat the Titans. I mean, two solid teams.
Titans without Henry.
Yeah. Atlanta.
And without Julio Jones.
Cleveland, the Panthers, the Chargers. I mean, they're, you know, I mean, they were right in that. That was a great Cowboys game they were playing as well, that overtime.
What was their first game of the year?
What was their first
game of
the year?
For the Patriots. How'd they start the season?
1 point loss to the Dolphins.
Oh, that's too bad.
I mean, they're going to get to the playoffs. Yeah. Rookie quarterbacks still don't usually win in the playoffs, though.
I agree with you, but the only thing you can argue is, yeah, but a rookie quarterback under Belichick.
That's true, too.
Changes the narrative.
That's still.
Because he's still king. And I mean, even last year, they had Cam Newton, and they won a few games.
Right.
I mean, he's been terrible in Carolina now.
Yeah. Very true. I mean, they won a few games. They were still not good last year with Cam Newton. I mean, there were other factors as well. But
I almost wonder if their false fall from grace last year made everybody think that the Bills might have had a better shot. This, me included, I thought the Bills would be.
A lot of people on the Bills bandwagon. I was never completely sold on that. One of the things is, okay, now you've got to play a first-place schedule. And now you've also got to show up. Do it again. So.
And, well, my thing with the Bills is the last 3 years with Josh Allen, they got steps and steps better.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, if they take that next step, then they're going to be a Super Bowl contender. But they didn't take that step this year.
No. And the AFC is out there for anyone to grab right now,
the
really,
NFL
as well.
The NFL is out there.
No, I mean, that's very true. But I think especially the conferences have kind of swapped this year. Last year, there were really no real good teams in the NFC, and that's part of why I think Tom Brady was able to get to the Super Bowl. The Packers were probably the best team, They beat them on the road, so you know you get what you deserve. But this year, I think it's kind of flip-flopped a little bit with Kansas City coming so far back to the pack and all the inconsistencies that Patrick Mahomes has had. So I think the AFC is out there for really for anybody to take this year.
It's super interesting, and I would like to see a documentary or something about it, because is Mahomes figured out? Is he just having a weird year, which has happened to players before? You know, they have a year that's not their best, or they evolve, kind of change their game.
You know,
is it the defense? Is it that the receivers aren't as good in Kansas City? Is it? It's just a lot going on. And then last week, before this week started, there was three teams in the NFC that were above 500.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just wild. And this is what the NFL wants. They want parity. They want anybody can beat anybody. Helps with gambling sites. Helps with all that kind of stuff.
Helps with gambling sites. Helps with attendance. Yeah. Helps with TV viewership. It helps with everything. Because the more teams that can say they're in the playoff hunt, the more involvement. The more interest there is.
I know that we're getting into fall when baseball's over and they start putting up the in the hunt graphic for the NFL games. It's like, here's each division leader and here's who's in the hunt. And it's literally every other team in that conference at that time.
That's right. That's right.
Because it's so early when they start doing that.
Look at the Colts, where they started from and where they are right now.
Have you watched any of their Hard Knocks?
You know, I did. I watched the first couple of. Have you watched any?
I have not.
I
feel like they haven't promoted it enough.
They really haven't. This last week's, though, I turned it off. Yeah, it was just really uninteresting to me. I tried, and the first couple, you know, it was pretty good. There was some interest there. This last one, it was just really bland to me, I thought, because it's really – it just kind of felt like, okay, this is what I thought it would be. Now you're in season.
Yeah.
What are you really going to get? That kind of thing. It was just pretty boring, I thought.
We're starved for sports content at the end of the summer, and that's why I think that the preseason Hard Knocks is a good watch.
Because you can only go inside the game so far.
And even then, like I start every season of Hard Knocks, watch the first few episodes. I never finished one.
Really?
I just don't care enough.
I'm sorry for you, Bob.
By the time that Hard Knocks is heartless. Ending, we're really at the beginning of football, so I don't care about that preseason stuff anymore. And baseball starting to gear up for postseason at that point.
But that was always kind of the cool thing about Hard Knocks was it took you inside whatever team. It was still July or August, so you weren't into the football. You know, it was kind of getting you ready, getting you primed. It's like, oh, you know, this is cool. And they always did such a great job with those guys on the bubble, the rookies and all that different kind of stuff.
Which is awesome, but you can't do that in the regular season.
No, that's right. That's exactly right. It's just – it's so different in the regular season, and I think that even though they're giving them access, there's still only so much they can show because you're not going to give away trade secrets once you're in the season.
And is it almost like Showtime's answer to like be, you know, the college football, they go through the season with a team, or they did for a while.
Mm-hmm. They tried.
Yeah, and it didn't work because at that point you just want to watch the game. If you want to watch a game, you're going to watch a game. You don't need a documentary about each game every week.
And that's what this has turned into with the Colts. It's just a deeper dive into whoever they're playing that week. And it's just, you know, we can see all the highlights on SportsCenter or the interwebs or wherever we want to go.
They'd almost have to make it successful, like a wives show, wives of football players, and put it on E! And do something like that.
Yeah, and there's even, you know, there's some of that. Not like that deep, but it's still, you know, the typical, oh, I'm a nervous wife watching my husband play. And I think they had Darius Leonard's wife, you know, sitting in the booth. And Carson Wentz's wife was pregnant a couple of weeks ago. And that was really about as interesting as it got when they were, you know, the wives and, you know, and then Carson Wentz's wife had a baby and all that kind of stuff.
And, like, I know he was on standby, and I haven't seen the episode. I know nothing about it. But if they did market it on E! Or something like that, you might get more women involved in football, and that could help them with ratings. Because now they want to watch the Colts on a Sunday to see, like, oh, Carson, you know, him and his wife.
My wife always used to watch Hard Knocks with me. And
really?
I think she still does for the most part, now that I think. Not this one, not the Colts thing.
But I like it over the summer, too, because it's more featurey. This year's was more pretty awesome to watch because, like, Dak is back because it was the Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of neat to see how he's rehabbed. And you got to learn about him. It was almost like a Dak. The four or five episodes I watched, it was a Dak Prescott, you know, documentary almost.
Yeah.
Which was awesome, but and you see how he's a leader of the team and stuff. But I don't know how that Hard Knocks in the season's ever going to take off. I think it was a failed experiment, one and done.
You've said documentary a couple of times.
Well, that's what it is.
I just was listening to I've got no problem with that. It actually spurred a thought in me because I was actually just listening to a podcast. It's called Origins with a guy named James Miller who's written a lot of different books. Like, he wrote that book a few years back on ESPN.
Game Day,
and
too.
And he's got one out right now about HBO, like the history of HBO. That sounds really interesting. But so he's got these different podcast series. It's called the Origins series. And he was a couple of his episodes deal with the 30 for 30 series on ESPN. And listening to that with the backdrop of everything that's happened, the documentary, the 30 for 30 that I would like to see is what just happened this past week between everything here at Notre Dame with Brian Kelly packing up, Marcus Freeman getting hired, Lincoln Riley leaving Oklahoma, you know, to go to USC, obviously. Brent Venables going to, you know, from Clemson to Oklahoma, finally becoming a head coach. And then Mario Cristobal going from Oregon to Miami and all the stuff that was going on at Miami. Like, did you hear that, you know, like the whole thing about, like,
they
the way that
only
started? They were going to keep Manny Diaz if Mario Cristobal.
Only if they could get him.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, you're sitting there and your wife walks in and she's like, who are you texting? Well, I'm texting my side piece. If she can go out with me tonight, I'm going to go out with her. Otherwise, I'm going to leave you here.
Yeah. Otherwise,
I'll
we'll
just
make
hang
popcorn.
Out with you, whatever. Yeah. But it's like,
but to some degree,
but that's
the
week that shook college football, especially like 5 years from now, a look back. If you had an inside look at all of this stuff that just happened in college football, well, and, you know, like, again, like, if USC is a power again in 5 years, wherever LSU is in 5 years.
And wherever Riley is.
Yeah.
Go
ahead.
I don't want to transition too much here, but, like, even if Freeman has three.
That's why I made the transition.
Let's say. Because I go too off the reservation here.
That's okay.
So if Freeman, let's just say, wins the next three national championships and he's one of the top contenders for a pro coach, would he leave for the pros?
Oh, so we're already going there, huh?
Well, that's what I'm
saying.
We've
already got him a hot
candidate
for that.
You said in 5 years. Who knows what that crystal – I don't think that'll happen. Who knows what that crystal ball has? So it's kind of entertaining to think of that because every year there's, like, a lot going on. But this year in particular, the programs that are involved are either current powers or sleeping powers, I think, in college football. So do you
– I mean, these are all major names we're talking about.
Right.
And that's why I said – all of these, you know, and the Oregon job hasn't even been filled yet. Like, does Oregon try to go back to the well and bring
Chip Kelly
back
no,
in?
No, you can't.
You know?
Yeah, I think he got all he could out of that. But I think you're right. I think what annoys me about right now is that everyone has, well, I read this, or I heard this, or I heard that Notre Dame said that to Kelly, or Kelly said this to LSU, or Kelly. I would like to see a documentary that actually shows what was really said and the reasons for why.
Oh, I
in
would
five
too.
To 10 years, like you said,
I would
right
too.
Now we can't because what are you going to do? One guy left, one guy got hired. Good for them.
Even a year from now, I'd like to see that documentary.
Well, and how?
But like, if you listen to Brian Kelly and him lay out his timeline, it's like this stuff happened in a matter of hours, really.
In his world, his agent's world wasn't the same timeline, right?
Well, I mean, I haven't heard, like, has his agent said something else? But according to Brian Kelly, what he told Reese Davis is, well, I don't hear about any of this stuff from my agent until the end of the season. And then he says that there was this big list of teams that were interested in him. It wasn't just LSU and USC. He said there was a long list, is what he told Reese Davis.
Yeah, I think Toledo was available. I think no.
Well, like, would Miami have been interested? Because you would think that a guy like, you know, what Brian Kelly brings and what they need at Miami.
I think it was Angelo DiCarlo tweeted something. He said, how close is Brian Kelly to leaving after every season then, if that's the case? If he, at the end of the year, is his agent always fishing and seeing what's out there and then presenting Kelly with options and he decided to stay? I keep going back to it, and this is what I said. The fact that he broke the wins record, I think, made him feel like, and he kind of alluded to that almost in his interview, or straight out said it, I've done everything I can at Notre Dame, minus winning a championship, but he doesn't think he can, obviously. I think the winning that wins record, so he knows he's always going to have something on Notre Dame. And I think that's part of the reason why he's like, I'm ready to leave right now.
I don't disagree, and I think that you and I were talking about it last week.
The egos.
The timing of the whole thing. When he made the out, he did it before the college football playoff this year. So, or, you know, whatever. You know,
He
didn't know if it was going to be college football playoff, but
he knew it was a possibility.
If he gets back again and he loses another lopsided game to Alabama, then his stock drops. But his stock, between the fact that
to
most observers from the outside, the job that he did with the coaching and winning 11 games and doing the whole thing.
You brought this up before.
Yeah, that's exactly right. To all these people from the outside, and then you look at the track record, and now he's the winningest coach in Notre Dame history and all these different things. Well, again, like, we're looking at this from the outside. We're not looking at this from the inside out. We're looking at this
outside
the way, you know, because there are a lot of LSU people who are a heck of a lot more fired up about Brian Kelly than I thought they were going to be. You know, like when you looked at some of the guys on TV who are LSU alums and all that different stuff, talking heads on ESPN.
Yeah,
and
but
all
I, that. I heard what Jesse said last hour. You can't deny his wins. He's a hot commodity.
Right.
If there was smoke every year about how good he's been the last, I'd say 2 years maybe. Yeah, he's got to be one of the best hires you could pluck from some other college to go
to
your college.
No, that's true. That's true. I think we all just assumed
he would stay.
That because it's Notre Dame, yeah, that he would stay, that you never had to worry about that.
And that's just not – I mean, I'm not – I don't care, but it's not fair to really think that way.
You don't care, right?
I mean,
I'm just teasing because there's a question that we're going to get into in rapid fire here in just a second. That'll kind of go there a little bit. We'll lead with that when we come back. Deal?
I'm good with that.
Okay. He's Bobby Hensley. I'm Sean Steyers. Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues. We've got rapid fire coming up next. Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
Who wants to have some fun?
Rapid fire starts now on Sports Radio 960 AM WSBT.
Thank you. Rapid.
Your host, Sean Steyers.
Always early. Better to be early than late.
You were talking over it, too. I don't know what you're talking about.
My mic wasn't on as early as yours.
All right, fill in the blank. It's blank that Notre Dame just lost its all-time winningest head coach, yet there is no real concern about it.
Naive. Okay, so everything that's going on with all of the coaching stuff, realistically, look back at what Brian Kelly has done for the program.
That's a good point.
He's made them a national contender every single year. He's made them one of the top recruiting destinations for in an area and that's not great with weather. There's not a big city around. He's made them one of the top destinations for players, one of the top programs in the country. Before him, I know you've talked Ignazium of all this, but like it's been since Holtz, since that's happened.
And that's the numbers but, say, and I'm not trying to be Danny Downer here, but I'm just saying the percentages. I'm saying the percentages.
Right.
You know, that the handoff now to Marcus Freeman, that yeah, you know, they're in a great place from a program standpoint, but the numbers say that it's not going to be as easy as we're all making it out to be right now. Right?
Okay, and it's twofold. Because one, who's ever going to hire somebody in any job? And they're like, well, that's probably not going to
work. The percentages, the number, that's what I'm talking
probably,
about.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I'm saying, like, who's going to hire somebody and be like, well, probably won't work out, but we got to hire somebody. Let's just throw this guy in. No, they think they believe in him. But they believed in Willingham. They believed in Davey. They believed in Weiss. They believed in O'Leary.
Right, they believed in all these guys when they hired
him. And even on a lower level, on some of the coordinators they whiffed on, they believed in them. And then you never hire somebody thinking they're going to be a failure at this level.
Right.
So I think it's naive to think like, oh, okay, so at least there, because the perception I'm getting from the fan base is at least we're going to be probably going to be better. But you might have to live with the fact it might not all – this is a Debbie Downer segment. It might not live up to those expectations because those are lofty. Because besides Alabama, besides Clemson, who's had a better program in the last 5 years for sure?
Ohio State.
And maybe Oklahoma.
Yeah.
But that's it. And Notre Dame's
up
there.
Yeah, and we've kind of touched on this before. Yeah, but Notre Dame, in terms of programs, so last 5 years, Notre Dame is top five.
To throw your head coach out there and just say, well, he's gone. Mm-hmm. We promoted our coordinator. We're going to be just as good.
But
he's young and he's
– right.
Yeah,
you're also not just handing it off and Marcus Freeman's bringing in a completely new staff. You've got essentially 90% of the staff minus the guy who is the head coach. So the infrastructure is all there.
Okay.
And you've got the best recruiter of the bunch because of Marcus Freeman, the recruiting has definitely
– picked up.
Seen an upward spike in the last 11 months.
Yeah. But then, okay, that's like saying, all right, well, we know Nick Saban retired, but we promoted an assistant.
No, I get it. But Urban Meyer left, and look what Ryan Day has done. He's lost one Big Ten game in the time that he's been a head coach. It just happened a couple of weeks ago against Michigan. When he lost to Oregon earlier this year, it was his first regular season loss. But that can be the other side of the coin, too. So now... is, you know,
how long
because the fade from Urban Meyer.
I was just going to say.
And it was the same, and I said the same thing when David Shaw took over at Stanford from Jim Harbaugh.
He had the
Harbaugh
players.
Built that program, And
they started.
David Shaw had some success for about 5 years. But look at where the program is now, 3-4 years after that. They're seeing a downward turn. Now, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I'm saying the percentages say that it will for Notre Dame eventually catch up, especially when you're talking about a first-time head coach and all that different stuff.
Sure, and I think it's always been weird because like Weiss had a really good year early with recruits that weren't his.
He had two good years early, but the thing with him was he had no college background,
right?
And he didn't know how to get the next tier of guys ready to go, you know. But again, that's part of how Brian Kelly has been able to sustain the program and develop these guys and keep the program going more consistently because of the long track record he had in college. He was able to do what Weiss couldn't do. Weiss was a good XO guy, but he couldn't
lead a
consistently
program. Yeah.
Sustain that and develop those guys and keep the program going consistently.
But Willingham had a good year early with players that weren't his. So I'm saying
They faded by the end of that first year, too.
And absolutely.
Then
it was all built on the defense.
It was smoke and mirrors. It was all built
on
the defense.
I agree, but you know, when you look at wins and losses and where they were, and obviously he didn't maintain it, Weiss kind of dipped, but then his players were good for Kelly at the beginning. I just think it's to keep your expectations just as high, it might take you 2 years to cycle players out to see what really this program will be under Freeman.
Right, and I think it'll be good, but you're still talking about all these things that he's going to have to do that he hasn't had to do before because now you're the head coach. You're going to be pulled in different directions from
media,
Sunday through
from
Friday.
Recruiting, from coaching, from everything.
And you've got to make decisions now on game day as well
that
you didn't have to make before.
It's just like – and I say, like, it's a top five program. To be handed – not handed. I mean, he's earned it. I don't mean it like that. I just say to be all of a sudden – he didn't think probably in November that he was going to be the head coach of a top five program in America. So that's a lot to take on. And to just not have any bumps in it and just transition to upwards and onwards, that's a really tough ask. So
But
the fans to think, hey, we're not going to miss a beat. We're going to be still winning 10, 11 games every year. We're going to be in the playoff talk for every single year. It's just a lot to ask.
Yeah, because he's won the press conference. And like everyone's talking – like. And I made fun of it, too, like comparing Notre Dame's press conference to Lincoln Riley's press conference at USC. Have you seen some of that video? It's like it's laughable. But at the end of the day, what happens at the press conference is completely irrelevant.
It's coaching a game.
No, that's exactly right. Now they've got to go out and recruit, develop, coach, and do all that different stuff, which I have every confidence Marcus Freeman can do. But, all these guys are there for a reason, you know. But just because USC's press conference didn't look good doesn't mean Lincoln Riley's not going to go in and have success at USC. Doesn't mean he will, doesn't mean he won't. But
just means maybe their media department's not as good.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. But, you know, again, the other side of it, with Brian Kelly, the reason so many people are, well, don't let the door hit you in the butt, is the way that he handled this as well. And that's a big part of kind of what I was talking about with this question as well, is the fact that 12 years later, Cincinnati fans are still, you know, scorched earth with Brian Kelly. I think it's going to take a long time for anyone around Notre Dame to really appreciate this stuff with Brian Kelly because of the way he left things.
I think Brian Kelly was a really good coach. I think he is a really good coach.
Was a good coach at Notre Dame.
He's also a really good politician.
And
I think that when you mix those two together, he was a perfect fit for that Notre Dame job. And I think that's why it hurts people so much, and that's why they're so angry at the breakup, because I consider it a breakup still. Well, I still think of it as a relationship breakup.
No, it is. Go ahead.
Because I think that if he had – what do you want him to do? Flirt around with teams and then, like, maybe have some smoke and then eventually have some – he just left. And he's gone, and people – for a couple days, for 24 to 48 hours, we're really upset and hurt by it. And I don't get that, because he's gone. Like, let it go. He's gone. You can't bring him back with your emotions. And now I feel like with Freeman, like, yeah, well, we moved up anyway. We got a better guy anyway. And you may have.
You got a more likable guy.
You have a player's coach versus a guy that ran it as, I'm the president, this is my team.
You got a more likable guy. All those things that people would criticize Brian Kelly for, the lashing out at players and all those different things, you know, that was, as you said, the politician side. He covered a lot of that on a day-to-day basis. But deep down at the heart, it just seems like, again, when you look and see all these things, that was the true guy that we saw leave.
And that's with the things he was smoothing over.
Yes.
That was just the real him, and then eating his crow and trying to make it look good, or, you know, blaming players when it wasn't necessarily needed.
Exactly.
Stuff like that. And that's what I mean. If you were paying attention to those things all along, you shouldn't, like, yes, appreciate what he's done, because he's made your program perennial contender. But, like, it's the same with Nick Saban. I know it's an unfair comparison, because Nick Saban's got so many championships and everything, and he's got a easier recruiting base at Alabama.
Well, and especially in this instance, because of the way things happened, it's one thing when a coach decides he is going to leave for another opportunity. But again, the way it happened and the timing of the whole thing makes it worse. So especially from that, you hope that it doesn't take him leaving to appreciate, again, all those things that he's done, especially over the last 5 years.
Is Kelly... because he gets compared to Saban. That's not the first time, right? It's happened before with their attitudes and the way they're not players, coaches necessarily. Now he's going to where Nick Saban won his first championship. Like, is there going to be, I don't know, comparisons? Or is there going to be, like, well, if Nick Saban could do it here? Because like you said last week, Ogeron and Miles weren't good X's and O's coaches.
Right.
They were kind of, I don't want to say airheads, but some sort of aloofs almost at times.
Right. But it's also, I mean, that also really hammers home the point that those guys being able to win championships, especially the fact that they did it in the SEC in that conference, the ability to get the high-level recruits, how much difference that makes. And that's where that's still what Marcus Freeman has to do. Again, he's off to a good start with that, with the guys that he's got in this recruiting class coming in next year and the year after that. But that's something on both sides of the ball that has to continue to spike upwards for Notre Dame really to ultimately be able to take the next step, which is not just winning a semifinal, but winning a championship game.
Right. And I mean, like.
But that's where Brian Kelly thinks that he has a leg up now, because he's a recruiting rich area where he doesn't have to recruit
standards.
The whole country. Yeah. And he's talked about, you know, basically there's open checks, you know, blank checks, and everything is available for him. They've got all, you know, that's something.
Sure.
You know, it's a different sport, but that's something that Paul Maneri found out. Leaving Notre Dame to go to LSU.
For baseball.
That the resources, yeah, that's exactly right. Of course, he just retired, but he won a national championship 3 years later. But that's something. There were a lot more advantages that he walked into that he didn't have to deal with here at Notre Dame.
But Brian Kelly also is going to have to be a politician on his recruiting, because a lot of these players aren't going to like the way he's left his last two programs.
No, that's something I wonder as well. That's something I wonder, you know, how much impact that has, especially in the short term,
right,
with his ability to recruit time and do those things. But I did see that apparently there was a report today that he hired the head coach from McNeese State, who is supposed to be essentially the best recruiter, you know, in the state of Louisiana. So he's gone out and got a guy who can be a really great recruiter for him already, it sounds like.
Right, and that's where I think Freeman at Notre Dame is actually...
Which is essentially what he had to do here. He had to outsource his recruiting, you know, for it to
right
get better.
Well, a lot of coaches do that in some no level. And, like, they go
but
for
again,
the stars,
not
but then the
every,
rest,
yeah. And, but right, that's but again, that's like one of the things... Marcus Freeman, it's great that he is a recruiter and that he's going to invest in recruiting, but you can't always be the point man on, you know, on right everyone with recruiting. That's something that you have to be able to delegate to an extent. You want him to be proactive and out front in it, but you can't always be the lead guy because you're the head coach at Notre Dame now and there are a lot of directions that you're going to be pulled.
Well, here's a question that I have for you. How important do you think the next two games for Notre Dame football are in the Marcus Freeman era for recruiting, for success, for attitudes?
I think if they win the bowl game, it can be really big. If they lose, I don't think that is going to be a complete detriment because of the fact that, well, okay, we were, you know, you can fall back on, you know,
it was Kelly's year and
yeah,
the turmoil,
that's right,
and
that's
whatever
right
weird times
all
you
the
had.
Yeah, every, you know, you can, but you can fall back on that.
But if you, I said two games, so if you lose to Oklahoma State, then you lose to Ohio State to start next year, are there any like, oh no? Because I mean, everybody in this world is rapid reaction.
I think
instant gratification.
I think how it looks against Ohio State, especially since it's a road game.
Yeah, just an interesting time.
I think
to
that
step
I
in
think that that'll matter. I think that that'll matter for sure.
I hope that it doesn't too much for this first game, no matter what. Either way, I mean, if you win, you maybe take some positives out of it. But there's several players that are on this team that are playing in that bowl game that won't be here next year anyway.
Yeah.
So the momentum from one game to the next over a season where you have 8 months off isn't really fair.
I mean,
it's big for like recruiting in the
offseason. People always talk about momentum going into the offseason. I think that maybe there's more of a case for that now just because of all this stuff that we've been talking about, that, like, you know, all the feel good stuff wears off possibly a lot quicker if you lose a game to Oklahoma State. Obviously, if you were to lose a lopsided game to Oklahoma State, which I don't think would happen, but I'm
right
just saying
yeah
if, then I think that a lot of the luster wears off pretty quickly. But if you win, I think that maybe there's more of a case for momentum going into the offseason just because there is so much positive vibe around Marcus Freeman right now.
And I almost wonder if Notre Dame wanted to wait on that decision because of that. Like, let's just get through the bowl game. But then the fact they were in the playoff and the committee kind of was saying, well,
right,
the instability that you have.
Right.
So I wonder if that made them force their hand to get Freeman in before the bowl game.
Might have.
So, like, because you had to, right? If anybody, if the weekend had broken differently, but you don't have a coach, Ohio State's jumping you.
Yeah.
Oklahoma State's in. Who knows?
Yeah.
So I understand why, but it's just now it's like, okay, the way things they did fall out. Okay, now you're playing Oklahoma State, and you're already getting Freeman in a bowl game.
Got a break. We'll come back. Probably one more question when we return Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. All right, Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. We're going to be winded down. Be wrapping up here in a minute with Bobby Hensley.
Hi.
Last question tonight. Do you have more or less interest in the college football playoff now that you've got a group of five teams, Cincinnati in there at number four?
Less. I don't. I'll be honest, the semifinal games have been so bad for so long. There's been a couple good ones, but just any of them are tough to watch. And then you add Cincinnati.
There have been very few that have been competitive.
Very few.
And again, you know, this goes back to Brian Kelly last, you know, that whole thing. It's like, it's not just Notre Dame. It's that you talk about Notre Dame because they're Notre Dame and they're a higher profile team.
And that's
No one's going to care if Alabama beats the snot out of Cincinnati. I mean, I'll watch it, but I definitely am not more interested just because you've got the quote-unquote Cinderella in there.
And then the only thing that can happen, I think, to Cincinnati is they could hurt themselves. Because if you go into that and you lose terribly, I know they're going to the Big 12 in a couple years, but they could hurt their national brand almost if they just get absolutely laughed out.
Well, I don't know that they have a national brand to begin with.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Okay, well, they aren't well, and then I guess if you win, you grow your brand, and that's possible. But
yeah,
it'll be interesting. I don't care. And I don't – the whole first round anyway, okay, I'd rather watch championship.
You know, we were talking about parity with the NFL earlier this hour, and I'm not saying that there is parity this year, but I definitely think that the top 10 – these teams are all a lot closer together than we've seen in a long time. You don't have one or two dominant teams sitting at the top. I think it's pretty wide open going into this thing.
You mean you don't have the Clemson-Alabama matchup?
I mean, like this year would be...
We've just been settled with that for a while.
Yeah, like this would be such a good year for the 12-team format, really, because of the fact that I think you've got a lot more evenly matched teams than you typically have.
I think you asked me once, like, what should the postseason system be? And it depends on the year. Because there's some years where you just want one versus two. Mm-hmm. There's some years we want four. Some where six or eight would be better.
Yeah.
So this year would be one with the more the merrier because they're all equally talented. But I don't – not every year is the same. And you can't do it that way, obviously.
And let's be honest, if – and that's the crazy part about this whole thing is if Cincinnati is not on Notre Dame's schedule this year, and the only reason they were on Notre Dame's schedule is because of Brian Kelly's ties to Cincinnati, Notre Dame's probably undefeated. Cincinnati, maybe they're undefeated, but they'd be on the outside looking in. The only reason they made the playoff
is
because they beat Notre Dame, because otherwise their schedule wasn't anything to look at. They would just be Central Florida right now if they hadn't beaten Notre Dame this year.
What's hard for a lot of those teams, too, is who wants to play Cincinnati right now?
Yeah.
Why would you schedule them for next year? Because that's going to be a really tough matchup for your team, and then that's a potential loss.
But as you said, in a couple of years, they're not going to have to worry about it
right.
Because they'll be in the Big 12. They win the Big 12. They'll get into the playoff. So.
Right. But, I mean,
we're talking bigger format and all that.
So. Right. And then that's the other thing. The more you expand the playoffs – there's any more meaningless regular season games. Like, if the playoffs was 10 to 12 teams, or 8 even, Georgia and Alabama both knew they'd be in no matter what. So, like, that game loses a little bit of its luster.
Not really, though. Because, now you're right. The loser would probably still get in, but you're also talking about the difference between being... If you lose that game in the SEC championship, now you're not going to be a top 5 seed. You're going to drop down to at least number 6 someplace because, you know, the way they've talked. Now, again, it depends on what format they ultimately come up with. But what they've talked about is, top 5 seeds, top 5 conference champions and all that
stuff. This year, the seeding's kind of a joke because you're not going to put Alabama and Georgia against each other in the first round. So you knew they'd be split up. So one of them had to be 1 and the other one had to be 3.
And I've got no problem with that. But why would you want them
absolutely
in the semifinal?
But then when everybody's like, why isn't Michigan number 1? Well, you can't have Alabama and Georgia 2 and 3.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with Michigan, who might be deserving of the number 1 spot.
Yeah.
So it's just... the way it played out this year kind of was weird.
Yeah, I don't buy conspiracy theory necessarily, but you don't want to see two teams from the same conference match up in a semifinal.
When they just play each other for the championship.
Yeah. You don't want it competitively, and it is a TV show, whether you like it or not.
Absolutely.
Part of it's a TV show. So. Right. All right, this is a radio show, and we are wrapping up right now, Bobby Hensley.
It was a radio show. Now we're done.
Right. He'll be back again on Thursday. We're brought to you by Budweiser, King of Beers, locally distributed by United Beverage Company of South Bend. Football fans, this Bud's for you. Food Bank of Northern Indiana, Tim Grell State Farm Insurance, Midland Engineering Company, Mishawaka Education Foundation, Barnaby's of Mishawaka and Granger, Fisher's Barbecue and Catering, South Bend Orthopedics, Wings Etc. Grill and Pub, Four Winds Casino, Mimo's Pizza, and Legacy Heating and Air. That's going to do it for tonight. We will talk to you tomorrow. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, Sports Radio 960 WSBT.